Berlin, the queer Boston music legend, formerly the frontman of Orchestra Luna, Berlin Airlift, Rick Berlin the Movie, the Shelley Winters Project, and currently of the Nickel and Dime Band, is known for his zany lyrics and unflinching wit. Exploring boyhood, family relationships, and the dynamic social workings of Boston through the decades, Rick Berlin's work is, according to Amanda Palmer, uncategorizable, part punk, part musical theater, part sentimental sap, part wordplay master. I had asked our mutual friend Brian King if he would like to introduce Rick, but unfortunately this is the only night Brian's aerialist could rehearse with him, so he couldn't be here. I asked him for a few words to say, and this is what Brian had to say about Rick. Rick is and has been the Boston music scene since the 70s. I'd say LA has Randy Newman, Boston has Rick Berlin. Not only has he always raised the bar for New England for smart lyrics and theatrical rock, he's also been the fairy godfather to probably thousands of musicians finding their way. So I'm very excited to introduce Rick Berlin.
Thank you, Amanda. Now, what is it about Gloucester that people show up for art? Do this in downtown, you're lucky to get one person, and it might be a relative, if you're lucky. So I do this thing called songs with subtitles. So I read one of these things, and then I play something on this, okay? In my mind, they relate to each other. In yours, that remains to be seen. Rambo Redux, that's not the movie, right? Okay. You know the question, what is your type? You can sort of answer that, but you don't want to. You don't want to admit to anyone, least of all yourself, that you have a type, or worse, a pattern. But go on, Berlin, you can say. You like the marginal, the terrified, scary adolescents, or near to, the ex-jailbirds, the ones who hurt inside, scratch poetry on napkins and throw them away. The dispossessed, the dark, and the lonely. It's not like any old crumpled up, ferocious kid will do. Yours is not some easily tagged Florence Nightingale syndrome. They have to be good looking in that pimply, searing eyed way. They have to see through my bullshit. They have to be young and pretentious and smart. We always think they're smart, Danny Fields. When I look back at those boys, especially reading again about Rambo, I realize they all have some of him in them, some more than others, as I have some of Verlaine in myself. More than once have they enthralled me, set me on edge, and turned me inside out, and far away from complacency. Among them, most of all, was Michael, the boy I met at the screen door of my sister's apartment in Somerville. There he stood in his underwear, out of the blue, panting from the run from his house. "Will you walk me home?" he asked. I'd never met him. I'd never laid eyes on him before this night. Sure, of course I would. We were inseparable for the next year and the next and the next. He looked like Rambo. He had the same challenging, piercing, ice-blue eyes. He wrote prayers and poems and burned them. He aimed a gun at the back of his father's head when they walked in the woods in Louisiana. The gun was cocked, and he almost pulled the trigger. He was only 12. From the porch, his porch, he saw a motorcyclist beheaded when his bike slid under the tailgate of a truck. He wrote love words on the wall of his bedroom with his dog shit. He threw matches into the brush alongside a narrow road on Martha's Vineyard, caught fire. He drove my friend's VW into the ocean. He took off his clothes and boarded a metro bus stark naked. He gave me a black eye after sex. He shoved a Coke bottle up his dog's asshole. We slow danced in a bar for old timers, hugging, near kissing, showing off and laughing. They smiled at us. It was his idea. He dropped acid with me, but because he ground his teeth, or thought he did, he refused ever after to close his mouth. It hung open and drooled. I suppose he was crazy. Of course, I think we all are. But it was all too much for him, and for me. I met someone else, and he was hurt. We always hurt the ones we love. At a friend's suggestion, he went to a camp for tough kids up in Maine. The kids he taught, the kids thought he was gay. I guess he'd made a sloppy pass at one of them. I'm not sure, but the short of it was that he got hit in the lower back with a log and damaged his spleen. It was removed, and when he returned home, he had a scar like a railroad track on his belly. Then things got worse. His mom didn't know what to do. He wound up in Marlborough State Mental Hospital. When I went to see him, he was standing in line in a regulation pale blue pair of pajamas, accepting his paper cup of pills, just like the patients in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. A few days later, he drowned himself in a hospital bathtub. It was a scandal. He was not being watched. I went to his funeral. The boys from the camp and maid carried his coffin. He looked beautiful at the wake, even though he'd put on pounds. I broke down. His mom told me that no one in his life had loved him as much as I had. Still, I wonder, I worry, to this day, that it was our, my, tidal wave of attraction to him that hurt him most, that set him over the cliff. I still love him, my Rambo. He never found the African desert. He never found peace or gentle love. Since Michael, there have been others, two former inmates, an artist who again resembles the dangerous one, a fire starter of the soul, a ridiculer, a prescient. My knees buckle every time they seem to find me. You are so good looking that I think you might be sad. And so smart with words that I think you could be lost. And so good at kissing that I think you might be missing someone. And so calm in the storm, so cool, you might be way off course. You know so many people think you don't know anyone. And you laugh so hard that I think you're gonna cry. You have so many plans, but you get nothing done. When you tell the truth, it's just another lie. You don't know the reason why. All I ever do is look for everything's wrong. Still I love you, baby. You can hear it in every song. Take a chance with me. Try this dance with me. The night is young. The night is young. May I have this dance? Amanda, the night is young. You pretend to know the answer, but you don't have a clue. Your room is clean, but your life's a total wreck. Your body's tight, your clothes are hip, and you don't make love with anyone unless you're drunk. And now you're feeling less and less. All I ever did was look for everything's wrong. Still I love you, baby. You can hear it in every song. Take a chance with me. Try this dance with me. The night is young. The night is young. Have this dance. The night is young. Practice them every day, and I forget them every night.
Go, go, go. Fucking awesome.
Thank you.
Okay. Now this one. Is the sound okay?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to hear. Thank you. It's called Pool Hopping. Beauty. We never forget it. The real-time imprint on the heart of object, music, person is a Vasco da Gama love fountain. No photograph or recording is as true or as affecting as the real thing. It was all over Paris, the astonishing beauty of Père Lachaise, the Eiffel Tower at night, Notre Dame under cleanup construction. When I heard Nina Simone throw back her cowl at Wolsey Hall and open that mouth to sing To Be Young, Gifted in Black. Beauty is a force of nature. It cracked my chest open when we whiffen-poofed for Pablo Casals in Puerto Rico when I was drunk off my tits, his one diminuendo finger to his lips. I felt it watching Jack Kennedy deliver his inaugural address on a black and white Motorola in the driving snow. Again, when I saw a boy lift his head to smile in the TV light in a warm living room in Moosup, Connecticut. The sight of a shining face, the shade of unfairly long lashes, the hair on a wrist catching sunlight, a friend's eyes startled by loss. All are gifts from the human guru. I think in the promised slow motion reel we unspool in that split second before death, we catch these rare remembrances across the soul's silver screen. We were in love. We were drunk, sloppy, and happy on the high cumulus of romance. Ever go pool hopping? He asked. Nope. We're going. It's past midnight. Stars diamond the sky. Here's the deal. We find a mansion. We park. We look for a swimming pool, we crawl in on elbows and knees, we take off our clothes and slip into the water like alligators, so we swim, we get out, we drag back on our gear and run barefoot across the sprinkling lawn. The thought of seeing him naked in moonlight, memory, mercury silver wet, smiling that smile of his, pumped blood 1,000 miles per second through my heart. Sure. So we did it. We found a house, we parked, we crept, dogs barked. We stripped, hadn't the time to worry about shriveled dick in cold air. We slithered across the flagstone and into the shimmering electric blue. The water was ice cold, but the exhilaration of what we were doing, the fact that we were doing it together, the air, the light, the hush of whispers and the ecstasy in our eyes was mad, mad beauty. He looked like a boy I'd met in a dream, or the boy kissing his lover in marble at the Louvre, or all the boys I'd ever loved in one face. His eyelashes were heavy, splayed wet. A suppressed laugh moved his belly, his sex just above the waterline. That was the first time I saw him nude. Things got complicated down the road, but that moment survived like a stolen portrait in the love attic. Keats got it right. Beauty is truth. So, that was a long time ago. Most memories seem to be that. And the next song, I wonder how he's feeling, you know. I did get a phone call from him. But this next song I actually wrote about my nephew Sam. It's a question that's very hard to ask. Sammy asked it of me when he was, before he had hair down there.
I thought of giving you a call.
I'm funny or strangely slow to pick up the pieces of a broken heart the way I used to not so long ago. Maybe I've become a coward, 'cause I don't want you to say no. Sitting in the kitchen with our lives inside my head, my heart is so damn full it's gonna break. I never understand how something beautiful as the sun get stuck inside a cloud and leave you standing in the rain. In the rain. Do you still love me? Do you still want me around, or is it better that I go?
Thank you. You guys are wonderful. Believe me. I don't know what it is, but it must be the air up here.
You're pretty good yourself.
Just wait. It gets worse. All right, so Kate over here is my publisher. And she and Katie, when they're here, I have to read this one. Okay, so too bad. Car washed. My car, the Grand Am my mom bought, used, knowing she would wind up dead and I would inherit it, is a filthy, stinking mess. I tune up the engine, I change the oil, the brakes and tires are checked, but the interior, the inside shell of my menstrual red Pontiac, is bad news. It's banged up and bent. The aerial is twisted like a raw nerve. The AC is unable to make up its hot or cold mind. The window on the driver's side can only be raised or lowered with a clothesline. My auto body friend said, it's $300 or the rope job. Dust furs the dash. The back seat is torn loose from its mooring and crushed down to accommodate my piano. Deflated stop and shop carry bags lie like discarded toilet paper on the back seat. The screwdriver I use to pry open the lid on the gas tank peeks out from underneath a jumper cable puttanesca. One of the fog lights is out of its socket and rolls around like a fake eyeball, and the whole interior reeks of garbage. Don't you ever clean this wreck? I'm asked. My excuse is the weather. If I wash it, it will rain or snow. I'll lose the shine and the $15 it costs to run it through. But today is cowboy clear, and I felt guilty long enough. I will drive to my favorite car wash in Brookline, pay the next to cheapest option, enjoy the ride through, and tidy the fucker up. I'd rolled the passenger window down so that I could get a breeze in the car as I pull in. I reach over to wind it back up, and at the same time pay the dude collecting at the gate, a gay frenzy multitask. He sprays her down, fish hooks the front end, and the car lurches forward and off we lumber. I know that the window on the driver's side will leak, so I yank the ropes taut like a champ, and that's when it happens. That's when I'm hit in the side of the face by soap and spray. Hot soap, hot spray. What the fuck? In closing the passenger window, I'd actually lost it completely. Disappeared down the slot, soapy goo frosts me like a pearl necklace, a glue gun on the hands of the Terminator. I try to close the window shut, but like the driver's side, it's off track. The harder I hernia to lift it, the more it refuses. The more water and suds froth in, and the more I'm fighting a Waterloo. A pool of green slime collects on the passenger seat like a toxic pond, and I lose it, breaking into cascades of laughter. The spray, the wet, the slime, the entire gizmo is jerking off all over me, and I'm deliriously happy. Next up, wind tunnel, vaporizing hot air to blow dry soapy jizz. I press against the remaining shard of the window so that it won't come flying out of its slit and slice me in the neck. And then it's over. We're through the maze, my car and I. As we are regurgitated out the ass end of the colonic machinery, all sparkly and smiling, I round the bend and park next to the vacuum hose so I can suck out the ugliness. But I realize I must look ridiculous, like the clown who stuck his finger in the socket, hair like Bozo, a failed wet t-shirt contestant. I shake my head, I fire up the vacuum and give liposuction, only to realize that the grand dames of Brookline are peering at me with 50s disdain as they huff and buff their Mercedes and Audis, all high and mighty across this about this gonzo freak show. I know now how valuable the fool is at court. So there are one or two advantages of getting old. One of them principally being you don't give a shit what people think of you.
I used to be thin, but now I have no chin, and I used to have lips, but now I have tits, but I don't care. I don't care, baby, what you think of me. Well, I used to get nervous when I smoke weed, but now I just laugh and I touch you when I please. Whoa, 'cause I don't care. What you think of me? Woo! What you think? And all my friends are free. 10,000 candles on my Christmas tree. And I used to hate my reflection, now I love my face. Well, I don't care. I don't care, baby, what you think of me.
How do these things happen? The moment we fall or rise in love, I don't think it's ever said. Not right off, those three words. But maybe they aren't even in your head. Your knees give out in spite of yourself, in spite of all the expectation, self-protection, longing. But there it is, that incredible bullet in the heart. And it can happen late, really late in life, and it can happen early. Tommy never knew I fell in love with him. I don't think I ever put it that way, even to myself. I was 14, I think, or maybe a year older. And I wasn't the only one. Many of us at school had that stab in the gut over this kid. The sun stood behind him wherever he was. Blazing smile, boy's regular haircut, sport-ready arms and legs. I was just a year or two older. He wasn't in my class. He would visit my friends next door because he was their age. I hung out on the periphery. All my get-into-trouble adolescent skills stuttered around him. I felt lucky just to be near that golden energy. When I think about him now, I recall Martha, who is afraid of Virginia Woolf, describing her fantasy son, whose hair in summer was blonde before all the other boys. That rarefied, over-the-top memory. I'm not even sure Tommy and I ever spoke about anything that mattered. I just always wanted to be near him whenever I could. The odd thing was, he had an allergy. He could not be stung by a wasp and survive. This was before there was the emergency shot to fix it. And so it happened. He got stung. He died, 12 or 13 years old. Everyone went crazy at school. Classes were stopped. Our little group on Atlee Road stayed home. We walked silently to an old stone Episcopal church to pray for him, pray that he'd come back. If there was a God, we figured he would save someone as beautiful as Tommy. There was no resurrection. We gave up on God that day. God fooled us. He failed Tommy. Strange thing is, I still love him. I still see him in my heart. The sun still leaps out of his smile. The infinity of the soul is known to me through this boy I could only be close to without ever really knowing if I was. I remember my friend's name was Tommy Saplee. He was a beautiful boy athlete at Episcopal Academy. When he was 14 years old, he got stung by a bee. I hated God that night for taking Tommy. Tommy lit a candle forever in my heart that night. Weasty was a mainline beatnik painter. She was my best friend's mom, the first lady I saw naked, and she burned down her house just to redecorate the interior. Inhaled carbon monoxide because she thought she was inferior. Well, I could not understand why she took her life, but whiskey and a candle forever in my heart. Us open, and we all know loss tears us apart. We all know life's value is not in money or things, but in those feelings that tell you the truth from the start. Oh, how many candles are burning? How many hearts? Well, I'm not sure
my time is over. The laughter, the tears, the stories and the sparks. I know I'll see all of your beautiful faces shining and fearless to light up the dark. Oh, how many candles are burning? How many candles do you light? And how many hearts? How many hearts? How many hearts?
Thank you. All righty, this one. So I live right next door to the very tiny bar in Jamaica Plain, and it's called the Brendan Behan. And what's cool about it is that it's a talking bar. People hang out and meet each other. I must have gotten at least 35 songs out of that dump. And I got my apartment out of there. I met so many friends. It's just one of these odd places that it's like a little heartbeat that won't give up, all right? Go there sometime. This is called Vampire at the Bar. I think it's funny, but a Polaroid. The kid is super Michael Jackson-y with powder white face, baby Jane Hudson red lips in a smear, corn yellow teeth, layer cakes of black something or other denim. Goth cape accoutrement. Who is this Captain Midnight who rides the stool at the end of the bar at the end of the world seconds before last call? Should I? Would I? Four beers to the pocket. Strike up the band. I need to hear a sound, an emanation, a gesture, a cough, a clue. I need something to give him away, to set me up with an angle to hit on. While I'm throwing my can I buy you a beer, where are you from, where do you work, do you smoke pot resume together, I see in one dark corner a familiar face, an almost but not quite friend. I think there's a Tanqueray and tonic sparkling in one upraised claw. We share the loud gay laugh, have a similar over the glasses view of life, of odd behaviors, and friends in common, but don't know each other well. The point being, as I perch there, three stools to the left of the dark drifter, casing him out with a whale's eye, I twist and cast a lighthouse lamp across the joint and see my friend waving. Oh, I get it. He is captivated. He has an interest in Iago. I twist back and see that Mr. Spellbound, by his own monologue, has two blokes giving fascinated, unconditional attention. The voice is lispy and alto. Ew. The relief I feel at being turned off, knowing I won't have to take a fool's stab, is palpable, the sigh of the body. It is then that my friend, from the corner, has mounted the stool next to mine and stares like a bird dog at Zorro. The bartender asks if he needs a drink. Oh no, I'm here to see my friend Rick, he purrs, eyes lasered onto Hamlet, who is collecting his black shoulder bag, black iPhone, black everything, and heading out the door. Here to see Rick, I scoff, you are so full of shit. That obvious, huh? Are you kidding? The next door neighbor housewives hanging laundry and gossiping. The bond of Fenster Kaufers, Isherwood Deutsch for window shoppers. I think I've seen my first vampire, he says. One wonders if one should allow oneself to be entertained by a total stranger in black who might nip you in the neck and who might be heading up to reading up on the Craigslist killer. He hasn't been back. So there's an unnamed person that I know who has a little bit of an alcohol problem, and he signaled me over at the Behan one night, and he says, Rick, are you feeling predatory? I said, what are you talking about? He says, And he's absolutely straight. So stupid. All right, if I can remember. I'm going to remember this. Right, Sam? Are you a psycho? Are you weird? You gonna fuck me? Are you queer? See, I never take a man home before. My apartment is a mess. Got a lot of art junk around here, I guess. Look, I'm lonely. That word says it best. Says it best. Don't touch me. Go away. Into that room over there, okay? You can kiss me. Here. Then go. Just go. It's snowing. To go too far with all this shit. If this gun is overbearing, just we'll speak up and I'll call it. My girlfriends. Have often been my best friends well before Fag Hag made it into the cynical repertoire. Beginning with high school, the girl who gave a shit about me, who stood by her closeted pal, was a consistent fact of life. She championed my obsessions, my trafficking in the emo underworld, and my starry eyes about art and life. We'd become inseparable, interdependent, and shared a worldview with a made-up vocabulary, in-joke humor, and X-ray insight. What I overlooked, shamefully, were those rare girlfriends who loved me too much for their own good, who overworked our unsexualized connection, even as they knew, heart deep, that boy-girl love was not in the cards. They'd listen patiently to my crush rants, in the same way I listened to straight guys carp about their shitty girlfriends. Those unbreachable guys I'd mirrored with undivided attention as I weakly camouflaged my desires. I became the straight boy in reverse to my simpatico girlfriend. She bit her tongue and consoled me about the kid who hadn't made it all the way across the bybridge. She had waited and hoped for more of me for herself, fantasizing that she alone could have delivered the missing link in my loser love life. We got strung up in some dizzy parallel karmic love trap, a half-requited but not unrequited maze, as if put there to teach our sophomoric hearts what had not been learned about full-on soul connection. We slept in the stale bed of unequal romance, even as we knew, separately, sadly, that we would suffer. We do that, don't we? Choosing in best friendship, someone for whom we feel way more. Where the imbalanced heart longs for level ground, longing eyes, erotic touch. It's hard to believe that the person we feel so much for cannot, on their side, feel the same back. I've been super lucky. I've had several astonishing, talented, strong-souled, brilliant women nurture my better self and believe in me with spotlight eyes, even as it hurt. Even with those for whom the barcode scan of drunken locals inspired nasty fiction. Look at that one. He is so into his hair. We'd laugh. We were side by side. We shared art, absurd ambition, and disappointment. All the unguarded heart breaks until I woke up and saw how she'd been let down, or until she threw in the towel and chased after a straight kid who could truly love her back. From these great friendships, difficult wisdom grew. I love them all. I still do, my best girlfriends. Those I hurt when I didn't mean to, and those I didn't hurt at all. Each of them continue to smile from their perch on an elevated dollhouse stage with a great laugh, head back, getting me, getting them. Maybe in a distant lifetime we were lovers. Maybe we sustain a truer thread by not ever being all that we can be. It's from my friend Joan Wasser. Don't talk about Joan. Don't talk. Don't you talk about her. I'm in love with her. Don't talk about Joan. Don't talk. Don't you talk about her. I'm in love with her. What is it, Sam?
She walks.
She walks into a room. She doesn't know me, but I don't care. 'Cause love is not always easy, and love is not always kind. But if I get away with this, it will be a perfect crime. So don't talk about Joan. Don't talk. Don't you talk about her. I'm in love with her. She drives this old convertible. The sun is warm in her hair. I look outside my window, and she is at a stoplight drinking a beer. She doesn't know I'm here. So don't talk about Joan. Don't talk. Don't you talk about her. I'm in love with her. Don't talk about Joan. Don't talk. Don't you talk about her. I'm in love with her. I saw her yesterday. She was standing alone in a crowd, her sunglasses on, her hair pulled back, and she was crying. I was no help at all. I'm going to do one more, and then if you want to ask questions or something, or I can do some more shit, but I'll just do one more song.
It's called Band
Parents.
Where is it? 68. So, there's a lot of pretty funny stuff in here. It's not all the heavy shit that I'm reading tonight, but in my wonderful nickel and dime band, we get to be loud and you don't know what I'm singing. And that's fine, because they are awesome, and I love loud bands. Band parents are not the same as stage moms or hockey dads. They don't show up during childhood. It's not until the kids are in college and have left the nest. Then it begins, the nightmare. I watch them having dinner with their son before a gig at a nearby club. They look lost, anxious, and dispirited. They make innocuous conversation in hopes of Windexing the glass on their blurry imaginings. Seems like a nice enough club, dear, but so dirty. How do you get people to actually show up for these things? Must be awfully hard. I can't hear the words when you wrote them, right? Don't you think they're important? Anticipating the D-Day of distortion. We should have picked up some earplugs, honey, don't you think? Later inside the club, God, we look old. Stand out old. All those idiots bobbing their heads like dolls to whatever it is and the music is saying to them. And whatever it's saying, we don't get. He sure seems to drink a lot on stage. The owner's a prick, a loudmouth prick. That fat girl looks ridiculous in a miniskirt. Why does he close his eyes when he's singing? Why does he say fuck so much into the microphone? He loves what he's doing, I suppose, but his drummer's a real asshole. I can't wait to get out of this coke hole. They notice their own graying hair, bald spots, pot bellies, and motherly skirts. And yet they put up with it. They put up with him. They're not sure why. They don't talk to each other at the club. All the drinks in the world make no dent in their demeanor. Meanwhile, under the table, they pray that this is a phase. He'll grow out of it. Then they realize that fall back on is a pipe dream for their ever-practicing son, who, holed up in his bedroom all through high school, zits galore, shredding guitar and straining to zap out a zillion notes in front of the mirror, is in it for the long run. They worry that maybe he'll fall through a crack they can't see coming. They worry he'll catch some fatal STD. They worry that the void between what their kid is doing and their own world is unbreachable. They listen as carefully as they can to the demo that they had to pay for and begin talking above the music long before the first song is over, unable to pay attention, let alone comprehend what they hear. Unexpectedly, Dad gets weepy. For some reason, art and sound moves him in spite of himself, a catch-in-the-throat pride in his black sheep son. Had he become a heroin addict or a transsexual, things could have been worse. Although maybe more manageable than having to support his stupid band at ugly clubs where woohoos and tennis claps add up to zilch, where loading in and loading out seems endlessly tiresome, where the money is non-existent. They don't get it, and they hate not getting it, and they wish they didn't have to try. You feel badly for them, even though you can't extend a hand. They do look silly and sad. They don't know their kid anymore. Santa Claus is long gone, and their boy's dream impossible to imagine, let alone believe in or want for him. Will his kids be stockbrokers? They can only hope. No. I'm not good at this piano thing. This piano is really expensive. I use one setting or two, and now I can't find the one I want. Oh, Rick, please. Maybe Willie knows the answer. Ah, Studio Grand 2. Kids are loud and laced with neon. Baby faces bounce and fall, alcoholic mask of rubber, hopelessly romantic doll. Singer got a pink stiletto, stinking up the microphone,
Drummer look real psychedelic. Glasses of Mercure Chrome. Just a rock and roll romance. It's all a rock and roll romance. Seem like you know everybody. All the kids around the scene. Staying high and hugging, kissing. Dancing like a jungle queen. Love is not exactly feeling. Just emotion on the make. What the hell doesn't matter? What is real? What is fake? Just a rock and roll romance. It's not a rock and roll romance. Girl on piano, gin on the drum.
Very, 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 very old song. It's so simple that I forget it all the time, but I play it. It's the last song. Thank you for being here. Take care of each other. It's important. Oh, I love you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Henry. Thank you, Amanda. Thank you, Gloucester, for having such an amazing place to do something like this.